Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, it's not every day that you get an email from an employment attorney office. Employment attorneys, well, they represent employees and industries, and they aim to help. But what's different about HKM is that HKM, as part of their website, you go to hkm.com/football, and if you do that right now, you will find all of the NCAA Division I football coaching contracts, the contract rankings. You'll find how much Dabo Swinney earned last year. You'll find an article about whether Tom Herman has lived up to his contract at Texas. You'll find an article that caught my attention about how much a Pac-12 or a Big Ten coach might lose this season if they don't play football. Jason Ritterizer is with HKM. And is joining us now. Jason, thanks for making time. I appreciate it.
Hey, John, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This is so unusual for, you know, to see, like, you know, normally you wouldn't see employment attorneys getting into football. What bridged this together in your mind?
You know, hey, that's a great question. You know, it was kind of a labor of love just based on the passions of the individual lawyers at our firm. I came from the center of the state of Washington in an old town called Ellensburg, and grew up with some friends in sports who ended up in college and professional athletics. And so it's always been interesting to me. And Dan Kalish from our office, he and I would sit around and talk about college football contracts and employment contracts in sports. And so we had this wild idea a couple of years ago to start requesting these contracts, because despite the fact that they're public contracts, there's a lot of secrecy around college coaching contracts and what's in them and how much they're going to earn. And you can find rankings on the internet, but it doesn't tell the whole picture, because oftentimes those compensation packages either aren't attainable or there are particular clauses that make them unique. And so we started requesting these contracts, taking a look at them and finding some pretty interesting stuff. And we thought, you know, what a great idea to make these available to people. And so we put it on our website, and it's kind of blossomed from there.
Go to hkm.com/football if you want to get there. You had one piece on there that it says, how much would a Pac-12 and a Big Ten coach lose this season? And yeah, you really look at the incentives there. What are you guys looking at?
Yeah, so when you look at almost any college football coaching contract, they're divided into kind of two categories. The first is their base compensation, what they're going to earn just by showing up to work. And then the second category you look at is this category of incentive pay. And that kind of can be broken up into on-field performance and off-field performance. And obviously, if they're going to be incentivized for on-field performance and they're not playing this year, they stand to lose those potential incentives. And those things are around number of wins, around whether or not they make a bowl game, whether or not they make it into the college football playoffs, things like that. And so if you look at the collection of, like, for example, Pac-12 coaches, every coach is looking at somewhere between $750 to almost $2 million of potential lost income as a result of not playing football this year. And so we break down those incentives and how they stand to lose that money, which is a pretty interesting thing to look at from an employment perspective, because usually we're not talking about employees losing money, but in this case, because there's no football, they lose all these incentives.
Mario Cristobal, for example, 9-win season would trigger a $100,000 bonus, another $100,000 if he gets to 10. $200,000 more if he gets to 11, $250,000 more if he gets to 12. That's a lot of money on the table, Jason.
It is, and if he were to win the Pac-12 Conference Championship, he'd have another $150,000 on the table, and because that's not happening this year, it's simply lost income. I mean, he could have earned, talking about Mario, he could have earned an impressive $1.7 million based on the incentives available in his contract that just aren't going to be on the table this year because they're not playing football. So it's unprecedented, but so is 2020.
Jason Ritterizer is with us. He's with HKM Employment Attorneys. On their website, you can see the database for college football coaching contracts. Dabo Swinney, Nick Saban, Jim Harbaugh at the top of that. It got me thinking, like, would there legally be a case here where a coach could potentially have a lawsuit against a conference for not playing if the Big Ten or Pac-12 aren't going to? Is there a viable lawsuit there, or do you see that as a non-starter?
You know, it's a great question, right? Because you have a conference that's interfering in a coach's ability to earn the incentives in their contract, and so theoretically you could have a cause of action for interfering with a contractual relationship, something like that. In reality, it's a non-starter, right? Because the last thing that Nick Saban or Harbaugh or any one of these guys want to do is to be involved in some litigation against the conference where they're, you know, playing football. And so I think it's highly unlikely. I think it's more likely that they would go back to school and talk about the lost income and come to some agreement with the institution to compensate them for a pretty unprecedented year. But one thing I want to point out, because you mentioned those top earners, one thing that's unique in contracts this time around is that they're getting these licensing deals, which are part of contracts sort of for the first time. And it's followed the NCAA's litigation about whether they should be paying college football players and whether or not players should earn income for their likeness. In other words, their jersey sales and that sort of thing. And we're seeing that built into contracts now. It's in Dabo's contract. And those are some of the incentive pay that they're going to get anyways, even if they're not playing football, because their school is still using their likeness and their image.
Jason Ritterizer is with us, HKM Employment Attorneys. Jason, as I look at the website, you've got an article here on Steve Sarkisian's lawsuit in 2015. For those who don't know, Sark filed a lawsuit against USC claiming that he was improperly fired because alcoholism was a disability and then was protected under California state law. That's interesting.
Yeah, you know, I followed that one particularly closely. I'm a dog from the University of Washington, so Sarkisian was around when I was around, and I followed that litigation closely. He borrowed sort of a traditional employment claim in a contract sense and argued that alcoholism is a disability for which he should be protected. And there's a lot of legitimacy to that argument. You can argue about whether or not it was a legitimate argument in his circumstance, but nonetheless, any individual ought to be protected if they have a disability in employment, and that was an argument that Sarkisian made and made convincingly enough to reach a resolution.
You had the attorneys there at HKM kind of looked through some of the contracts to find some weird things. Doug Martin, for example, at New Mexico State. No tobacco during practices or games. Steve Spurrier, he gets a lifetime appointment when he's done coaching. He'll be a special advisor to the president of the university. $100,000 a year for Spurrier. What else did you find out in looking at contracts?
You know, one of the terms that we found that I didn't anticipate is the lengthy negotiation over private jet hours. And what those can be used for. It's, I think, pretty common knowledge that some of these coaches jump on private jets for recruiting trips, et cetera. But in many of the top earners, their contract also allows for private use of jet hours for their family, et cetera. So when you think of Nick Saban's family traveling to an out-of-state game, they're not jumping on a commercial airline. They're taking a private plane out of Tuscaloosa and heading to wherever Alabama's playing. So that was a term that was unique and something that I didn't really anticipate, and certainly something that I think most folks wouldn't realize are in these college football contracts.
Tim DeRuiter, who was at the University of California, Sacramento, was an independent contractor you guys found. How does that affect his employment status in that state?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great question. Obviously, independent contractors are treated differently than W-2 employees or regular employees, and so it can have a lot of effect on compensation. The largest one is a tax perspective. When you're an independent contractor, you owe both sides of that employment tax, which is like 15% rather than 7.5% for the employees, for the payroll tax. So from a tax perspective, that can have significant ramifications. You can also not be subject to some additional protections that employees are subjected to versus independent contractors. But what's most remarkable about these contracts is that every one seems to be unique and seems to have slight adjustments to what we would sort of consider a standard employment contract.
It's interesting because DeRuiter, as I look at him, it looked like he was fired at Fresno State. They probably owed him some money. There was probably an offset in his contract. Was there a potential advantage there for him being a contractor in the next job?
Yeah, definitely. So sometimes you see buyout provisions, and those buyout provisions are tied to subsequent employment, and how employment is defined can be important. And so on occasion, you'll see workarounds to subsequent contracts. So instead of a school having to buy out the coach from their previous contract, they'll try to make some argument that either they're an independent contractor or they're simply a consultant, or they'll delay a start time for the coach to prevent having to engage in these significant buyout provisions where the next school has to pay off the previous school for the coach's contract if they resign.
All right, one of the pieces here, and again, we're talking to Jason Ritterizer, HKM Employment Attorneys. You can go to hkm.com/football to see the entire database, contract rankings. It's pretty cool stuff. But when a college football coach gets fired, there is a big cost here to say goodbye. What did you guys learn?
Definitely. So we call these the golden parachute provisions. And oftentimes those are built into almost every one of these football coaches' contracts. It's one of the categories we look at in terms of ranking these college football contracts. And it's not uncommon or not dissimilar from a CEO's golden parachute, where if the coach is fired short of the length of their contract, they earn a payoff provision. In other words, the school owes them X number of dollars for departing early on the contract. Sometimes that's a lump sum. They owe them $1 million or something if they fire them. Sometimes it's based on length of service. So if a coach has a 7-year contract and they're fired in year 5, they owe them for 2 more years of the contract. And those provisions can have significant ramifications for a school, but they can also have be massive protections for a coach who signs a contract. If they know that contract is effectively guaranteed by a golden parachute provision, they're going to be more likely to take a risk on a contract.
I really appreciate the work you guys have done here. I know that, you know, you're marrying a passion with your profession here, so I applaud you for that. I think anybody should. Where do you stand on the Pac-12 stuff? Just as a fan, Jason, does the Pac-12 need to get busy playing, or are you okay where they're at?
You know, look, it's a great question, and they're tough. They're tough questions to answer, right? I would certainly defer to and leave the decisions on safety to those people who are in a position to make those decisions. But look, I'm a football fan, and it's disappointing to see the Pac-12 not playing right now. Thank goodness we got a little relief with some college football across the country this weekend, and we got some NFL games on Thursday and Sunday. And so, look, I think the fact that we don't have a uniform decision across the NCAA as to who's playing is going to create some real sticky issues, potentially sticky legal issues down the road. I hope everybody can get back on the field and do it safely and do it soon. But those are tough, tough decisions that I don't envy the decision makers who are in those positions.
I appreciate what you do. Thanks for joining us. It's Jason Ritterizer of HKM Employment, hkm.com/football for the good stuff. Leave it here. You got the BFT. Everybody. today on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. Here we go.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
Go to CulliganOfOregon.com if you want clean water. Get your water tested, for crying out loud. Know what you're drinking. Do what we did. CulliganOfOregon.com. Biggest surprise from the NFL weekend. Man, I'm sifting through this. I think Philadelphia losing so badly to the NFL team in Washington is what surprised me the most of the weekend. I'm not surprised that Tom Brady had some struggles. I didn't expect to pick six, but I thought the Saints were a tough week one matchup for him. I also thought the 49ers without some receivers would be pretty limited, although I thought they would still win the game. Judah Newby, your big surprise from the NFL weekend.
I really liked the Colts this year. And
yeah, that's a weird one. Jacksonville got them.
Unreal. I mean, they got Jacksonville 16 rookies on their opening day roster. Gardner Minshew, 19 of 20, three touchdowns. You got your rookie ninth overall pick, C.J. Henderson, defensive back, an interception and a big-time pass breakup on fourth down late in the game. I thought Phillip Rivers, T.Y. Hilton, that run game, Frank Reich, I thought they were going to just demolish the Jaguars. I thought the Jaguars were going to tank, and they come out, and they beat the Colts 27-20. I really liked the Colts to win the AFC South this year, and that's a stinker for them. I'm more disappointed in Indianapolis than I am excited for Jacksonville. I still think Jacksonville is probably a 4 or 5 win team, but good for them showing some fight.
49ers with the inside track on Trevor Lawrence right now. that is... I was surprised Jimmy Garoppolo looked so bad, and he's getting a pass a little bit because all the wide receivers were hurt and they were down to, you know, basically some scraps, but he missed some open throws. He didn't look good.
For sure. And Kittle got hurt right before halftime. He played the second half, but he was not targeted at all in the second half. So I'm not sure if Shanahan let Kittle play and just told Jimmy G, look, we're not throwing the ball to George. We're going to try to win this game without him. And he was just out there as a decoy. But, yeah, I don't know, John. Like, you got, probably need Samuel back. The big play to Mostert was fun, but you got to have some guys back for that offense to function on all cylinders.
They were very limited. I felt like I was playing Tecmo Bowl, and they had four plays. And it was like they were just running the same stuff over and over. And they moved the ball fine. It's just, you know, they got a punt blocked. Garoppolo missed some open receivers. He was too slow on the last throw of the game. Receiver was open. He just didn't get the ball there in time, and the window closed. So he looked like a young quarterback who was waiting to see the receiver be open before he would release the ball, instead of trusting that the receiver would be open and throwing the guy open. So big criticism for Jimmy G in the Bay Area, plus the loss of DeForest Buckner in free agency for the Niners. Massive loss. But I think the biggest surprise was I'm in one of those elimination pools, mm-hmm. where you get survivor pools where you got to just pick a winning team every weekend. And I was down to, I didn't pick the Eagles, but I felt like the Eagles were a pretty good bet to win in the opening week. I got away from it. I picked Baltimore to beat Cleveland, and they did. That was an easy pick, I thought, an easier one. But I looked at the Eagles and I went, huh, the Eagles, I like the Eagles in that game. And they got beat.
They've got a lot of offensive line injuries. Carson Wentz played really bad in the second half. And Washington is interesting because the optics on them is, you know, all negative. Daniel Snyder, horrible leadership, pretty bad person. Ron Rivera, great person, great leadership, battling cancer, you know, trying to bring something out of this Washington football season. And that defensive line, John, is so good and so deep. Chase Young was awesome. And they came out and won that game big time in the second half, outscoring Philly 20-0 in that second half. Yeah, but it's tough because I would have taken Indianapolis in a survivor, and they flat out lost. I don't know, man. Week one gives all sorts of different surprises.
All right, results. Who do you like in the games? You got the Steelers and the Giants, the 4-15 game, and then the 7-10. Tennessee Titans defense against the Denver Broncos. Who do you like in those games?
I'm taking the road teams in both. I like Pittsburgh to win big on the Giants. I think Daniel Jones is actually pretty good, but I think Pittsburgh's going to be one of the better teams in the AFC. So Pittsburgh to win by two scores and Tennessee to win by a touchdown. I think they'll cover the three on the road. I'm out on Drew Lock right now. I know he's a polarizing quarterback. I'm out on Drew Lock right now.
But, are we going to see Jadeveon Clowney in a Titans uniform on week one?
I think so. Yeah, it should be right. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard to
he's
the...
He's ready, huh?
Yeah.
He just suits up and he goes.
He's an interesting player. I mean, he's better run defender than a pass defender, but you're a Niner fan, John. You remember that Monday night game.
Yeah, like, he won that game.
He freaking wrecked it. He won the game. So he's got a little bit of that in him, but he's not like this elite pass rusher that people want to, you know, praise him as. He'll be good in that system, though.
I wonder how many games he'll play. That's the thing I keep coming back. Does he play in,
sure.
Does he make 12 games? You know, does he, or that's the over. I'll say 12 and a half. You taking the over or under?
I'll take the over on that, but that is definitely the concern. Meanwhile, the Broncos being without Von Miller, you know, that injury late in the preseason or non-preseason, I should say, that's going to hurt them as well.
He also said he was scared as hell of coronavirus. He's had a tough 2020. So,
paid millions of dollars. So
yeah, but, you know, I'm not saying it's like, you know, he's like the people who have lost their homes, you know, in fires, you know, but it was like he has an injury. He got coronavirus. He had, obviously he said that, you know, we keep saying it's been a weird year.
Yeah.
I'll go further. I think this year's just been hell. I mean, and I will say, like, well, let's frame this with the wildfires and the people who have lost loved ones to COVID-19. It's like, I think we're going to look back at 2020, and I think I'm hoping that it is sort of a hiccup, an aberration. I remember 2 weeks into the pandemic, I said on the radio show, I said, what if this is the new normal for a while? I was kind of having one of those down moments, and I had a listener who emailed me and said, don't feed that narrative. You know, this is going to be like a 2 week thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. Here we are, you know, and you and I out there, if we're listening to this, if your home is standing and you haven't lost a loved one or you haven't lost your job, I think we're all kind of feeling blessed like that. Hey, pretty much status quo is, you know, has been our thing. And I'm thinking about all the families out there that have lost, things and loved ones and property and their homes, and they're bewildered right now. Again, you can go to baldfacetruth.org if you want to help a family that's in need. That is the Culligan Water Cooler Report. We do it every day. The 2 at 2 is coming up on the other side.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face Truth.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.